Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, June 8th. I'm Ray Graff. Gardening today, we welcome back the Wrecking Crew. Greg Ward from Ward's Nursery, Fred Breglia of Landis Arboretum, Bob Graves of Fatigan's Nursery, and Dale Isler Riggs of the Berry Patch. You know, the Wrecking Crew was a team of session musicians who played on so many records in the 60s. They were well-respected. So I don't want to disparage this group, but the Wrecking Crew, to me, is a sign of respect. Give us a call, 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. If you have a gardening question, always one of our most popular programs, so I do recommend you call early or email voxpop@wamc.org. Fred, Bob, Dale Isler, and Greg, your gardening calls coming up after the news. Oh, hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Gardening today, we welcome back the dream team. Dale Isler Riggs, owner and operator of the Berry Patch, a first-generation diversified farm in Steventown, New York. Greg Ward owns and operates Ward's Nursery, a gardening destination in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. Fred Breglia is director of the Landis Arboretum in Esperance, New York. Bob Graves is co-owner of Fatigan's Nursery in Latham, New York. If you have a gardening question, call now. 800-348-2551 is the number. 800-348-2551 or email voxpop@wamc.org. Again, the number, though, 800-348-2551. Bob Graves, how are you?
I am good.
Great to have you back.
It's great to be back.
Greg Ward.
Yes, doing really well. I'm actually co-owner as well with my daughter, Eva, and my nephew, Sam.
All right, I got to change this.
They might be listening, and
I got in trouble once when somebody said I was owner.
So that'd be a management issue otherwise.
Greg Ward is I'm going to make this correction now. You're the co-owner of Ward's Nursery. All right, fine. Yeah, Eve, I apologize. Fred is the director of the Landis Arboretum. Fred, how you doing?
Good. Great to be here.
Are you the co-director?
No, there's no co-director. Okay. I'm it. All corner right. office and included.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
Wrecking crew, buddy.
You got a view. Someone wrote in you should be the raking crew, which I thought was pretty funny.
Oh, that's pretty good. We're going out on a limb with that one.
Yeah.
Oh, that's, okay. Oh, don't get started.
Well, look at the time. The show's over. Dale Isler Riggs is the owner or co-owner of the Berry Patch?
Owner and co-owner.
Oh, well, that's a trick. Good for you. So you're both things at once.
That's right.
The smoke. Let's talk about the smoke for a minute. Does it affect the plants?
Yeah, it's a good question. I've already had calls coming in on that. You know, long-term, you're going to have some effects. Short-term, there's going to be some effects. It hasn't been really rolling, I don't think, long enough to make a major difference. But what happens when, you know, smoke comes in the air and particulate matter happens? Well, basically, it's the same, similar to humans. It's blocking sunlight, which is probably less important to us, but more important to plants to a degree, to the point where at the Arboretum, we had our security lights come on in the middle of the day.
Wow.
There was enough of a block, so it triggered those. It also triggered my automatic lights in my truck. So also, what else could it do? Well, the particulates actually can clog the stomates, which are those little pores in leaves. Mm-hmm. There's been some research, though, that actually points towards the light being sort of diffused. Actually, there's increased light penetrating lower leaves.
Oh,
and in
so it's
some
good.
Studies, they show some productivity increases because more light's getting internally absorbed through those leaves and less on the external, but overall not great.
Would be a good thing if we got some rain after this. I mean, we talked last time about how dry it was. Some places had some rain, but we didn't have that much.
I'm glad you brought that up.
It's been dry.
Susan in Sunderland writes, can you please share what is your opinion about the rain? Is it good to clear the smoke from the air or not so good because it may be like acid rain?
No, I think it's going to wash the plants off, don't you think?
I think you know, a little acid rain isn't terrible for your garden, certainly for short term. So I don't think it would be a big deal. I do think that the coolness of this weather pattern has been good because we haven't been getting any rain. There's a lot less stress involved in the plants as they're really in this sort of major growth spurt now in June. So.
You know, it's interesting that in this part of the world, or in this part of New York, the limestone base, the stone base is limestone. So when you get acid rain, it actually makes the soil more alkaline because the acid is dissolving the limestone.
Oh, interesting.
We have a lot of alkaline soils around here, and you wouldn't think so.
Susan goes on, and I'll throw this to you, Dale Isla. Is there an impact on wonderful crops, especially strawberries? Are they still safe to eat?
I'm not aware of any health issues at this point from the smoke. I mean, it's the fine particulate matter. You know, that's why they don't want people outside, because of the way it can get into your lungs and your bloodstream.
Right.
I always recommend that you wash anything before you eat it anyways, even if you've picked it yourself. You don't know what else in Mother Nature has been around that.
Yeah.
That piece of fruit or vegetable or whatever. So it's always good to wash, but I wouldn't worry about, you know, any smoke particles being on it.
This email from Fred in Saratoga area. Can you identify this flowering plant? And I actually printed this. This came in about lunchtime today. It emerges in spring as a sturdy sprout like an asparagus plant and grows straight up over 6 feet before resting on other plants. We attach the tall stem to a stake. It only has a few short tendrils that don't really grab well. We've seen greenish-white blossoms with bugs on the flowers. We have two. It grows in a half-sunny area. Anybody know? We'll just take a look at the paper. It's compelling radio, no doubt. The number here is 800-348-2551. And while I have a minute while they peruse the picture, thanks to everybody who kicked it in during the fun drive. The fun drive's done. You listeners were magnificent, and we appreciate it so much. We're back to regular programming, if in fact you can call this regular programming. What do you think, Greg?
I have no idea yet.
Boy, you've stumped the band
here. Can I see that again?
Yeah. They said it's vining.
Yeah, the letter's attached to it. You know what? Why don't you guys pass it around? We'll go on to the next one. This is from Stan. Gardening help with asparagus. What should I do to save our asparagus bed? It's an older bed, 20-plus years, but produces well. Recently, I found the asparagus beetle. I tried neem oil more than once. Even picking them off, neither have worked. Any suggestions?
Oh, those nasty little asparagus beetles are always out there. We've had good luck with picking them off, and it actually has kept the population low over time. So most of the standard organically approved insecticides will take care of it. I've not used neem oil myself, so that one is probably, since that actually suffocates insects more than anything, that's probably not going to be very effective against asparagus beetle. But some of the other organically approved materials that our garden center
spinosad, pretty broad spectrum organic insecticide that usually works on beetle type and caterpillar type.
Yep.
All right. Yeah. Did anybody have a guess on the plant in question from Fred in the Saratoga area?
Still working on it.
Okay. You know what? We're going to put this one aside for the next show, and I'll let Fred, you can take it home.
I might crack this code by the end of the show.
Oh, really? Okay. This one's from Ray S. I wanted to send a question in regard to easy gardening. A couple of years ago, my grandparents removed a pool from their backyard because it became too difficult to take care of. However, there remains a large dirt pit where the pool once was. They like to go on trips to Vegas or Maine over the summer. So next time they go on one of these trips, I'd like to surprise them with a new garden. However, I don't know what kind of plants I should consider planting for them. Any recommendations for flowers that require little to no maintenance and return every year? And that's from Ray S.
I love these questions. What? The answer is no.
Oh, man.
Wow. Well, or the caveat is yes, as long as you mulch and weed and water and cultivate, you know, do a little pruning on occasion. You know, a lot of perennials out there, a lot of native perennials, things like Joe Pye weeds, Eupatorium, a lot of native asters. These are things that are all going to be blooming late when they come back from vacation.
Good luck with the hardy geraniums, too. They seem to be pretty substantial.
Roseanne is a selection of geranium that we've has been around for a little while now that has this extended bloom time, really from mid-late June right through the summer. Mm-hmm. The catmints are also in that category, so those are two different perennial plants that are pretty hardy, pretty tough. The salvias are blooming now. These, again, perennial salvias. So if you're looking for something a little earlier to start in the season, salvias to start, maybe some iris to start, and then catmints, coneflowers, geraniums.
I would think that Fred would pipe in here and say the most important thing is that soil preparation before you plant.
That's
you,
correct.
You know, if there's a lot of times when there's a leftover pool like that, it gets really sandy, nasty stuff.
You definitely do. You also don't know what the pH of that is.
You don't know what you got.
A soil test is just such a great way to start a project and have great results. And you know, there's really no excuse to not have your soil tested.
A lot of organic matter.
You got a lot of good resources here in New York. We can send it out to Cornell University. They'll give you an incredible test back. It's not that much. I don't know the prices, but they're all really, really are. The return on investment is incredible. So send it out for a soil test. See what you've got. You can even, with those soil tests, specify exactly what it is that you want to grow. And then they're going to give you back recommendations if it needs to be adjusted, if there's pH issues.
Yeah, if they just put down herbaceous perennials, if that's what they're mainly thinking about.
Yeah, and that would cover it. But if there's an adjustment, they'll actually tell you, like, okay, it has too much of this but or not enough of that.
Yeah.
Add this for that. And the same thing works for, you know, any crop, whatever you name it, they're going to give you an info on it. So soil test, pH, but definitely do that before you really start doing a lot of extra work.
Before we get to the break here, and then we'll hit the phones at 800-323-9262. No, that's not it. That's one. That's the fund drive number. 800-348-2551 is the number for the program. Been a long week. All right, we were talking about asparagus, and somebody, Amy in New Paltz, was writing her email at the same time we were talking about the asparagus beetles. And so half of her questions, she says, no longer need to be answered. But the second one is, can she expect the asparagus beetles annually? She's had a devil of a time getting rid of them.
Yeah, asparagus beetles usually show up every year. A lot of them overwinter in the soil. So you should expect to see them every year. Another, besides spinosad, is something that can be used if there's an organic form of pyrethrum.
Yeah.
That can also be used and is quite effective against asparagus beetle. Okay. What I've found to be most important is to keep the bed relatively weed-free. I won't say totally weed-free because that's almost an impossibility, but relatively weed-free. And a good dose of nitrogen fertilizer as you're finishing up your harvest. So you want lots of good fertilizer there so that when they start to grow fronds and you let those fronds grow for the summer, that's what's making the carbohydrates for storage for the winter and will help the planting come back well next year.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. It's the Gardening Show. Greg Ward, Delilah Riggs, Fred Breglia, and Bob Graves here to answer your questions, and we'll get to the calls in a moment. Seriously, Fred, I don't want anyone to know that you cheated using the picks. Oh, we're on the air. Okay. Oh, mercy. It's the Gardening Show, and Fred has miraculously come up with the name of the missing plant. And by the way, Jesse wrote in, and we double-checked Jesse is correct.
Yeah, so
what's the answer?
Smooth carrion flower, Smilax herbacea, and I believe that's exactly what the folks that wrote in said.
And they sent a nice picture.
It's a direct match. It looks right on.
Is that a nice plant? Do we like it?
I don't know a real lot about it. Okay. It says the climbing nun-woody vine is a herbaceous perennial up to 8 foot long, branches occasionally, light green to purple stems. It can go on and on.
I know anything named carrion flower. I'm a little suspect.
Yeah, worry about that.
Habit. I don't know. It doesn't show anything real bad.
Okay.
I guess it's desirable if you like what it looks like.
You know what? That's what I say about all the weeds in my lawn. You know what? The green, they look lovely. Let's just let it roll.
Yeah, it looks like just a herbaceous. It sounds like a pretty cool like herbaceous vine. So, you know, maybe.
Native plant.
All right. Yeah. Gardening show today with Fred Breglia, Bob Graves, Greg Ward, and Delilah Riggs. And to the phones we go. Samantha's in Glens Falls. Hello.
Hello.
You're on.
Oh, hello. So I am driving right now, so I'm going to pull over.
10-4. All right.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
So in my yard in Glens Falls, when I moved into my house like 22 years ago, my yard in the spring would just be a big mud puddle. So I looked up, like, how can I stop the mud puddle? And it was trees. A root system will take the mud puddle away. And so I planted two cherry trees and two apple trees. In the 20 years, the two cherry trees died. One of the apple trees just died, like, this year. I took it out because there's nothing there. I have one more apple tree left. And it's got, it's, the trees don't really fruit that often. Like, when there is fruit, it ends up getting picked off by the, or birds and stuff.
Yeah.
So I get one or two apples a year. But I didn't, it's not for the apples that I planted it. It's for the root system. But now the tree, even though it's got leaves and everything, it has like a fuzzy white thing on the bark.
That so sounds like lichen.
Yeah, it sounds like lichen. I think we all sort of think that. It looks kind of like a maybe like an algae type of thing, or like maybe it's kind of dry and scaly to a degree, kind of a.
You know what I often tell people when you
like,
have a.
It looks like cotton.
Yeah, that's just algae or lichen, I think. But when we have people come in with a drainage problem, what we tell them is plants don't solve the problem. They tolerate the problem sometimes. But when you have a drainage problem, you got to do something to drain the area. And if you can't, you go to something that will tolerate that. But apples and fruit trees are not the ones to tolerate wet ground.
It would generally be something that is a larger shade tree. You know, willow is always the go-to tree, but a red maple.
Racer rubrum would
be. Elm, trees that are large and tend to be found in areas that are, with damp soil that they can tolerate.
Yeah, bald cypress would work as well.
Bald cypress would be fantastic. Or then you'd enjoy the puddle.
I can't.
Go ahead, Samantha.
I can't put a tall tree in my yard.
So there are shrub form willows and things, but I think,
there are weeping taxodium, too.
Yep. Working on the drainage problem would be the better way to go.
Yep. All right, Samantha, good luck. Thanks for the call, and congratulations on pulling over. That's very good of you. 800-348-2551 is our number. It's Gardening Today and to West Stockbridge. Peter, you're on.
Here I am. So I'm a very lucky guy. I live downtown West Stockbridge, but I have a little stream that goes by my house, and I hooked up a little pump, and I'm watering the garden. And over the last few weeks, it's been sunny all day and very cool nights. We have 40 degrees up at the house and then 35 in the garden. And it seems to be going on and on and on. But I water at night, but then everything looks completely parched during the day. And is it all right for me to water during the day also?
Sure. I would recommend watering in the earlier part of the day.
In the morning.
Yeah. You want the leaves to dry out over the course of the day. If you water in the evening, you tend to keep the foliage wet a lot longer, and that can just create a condition where maybe we have more potential disease problems.
Going to have fungus problems if you water at night sooner or later.
I would also consider using some kind of mulching material around your plants so that you can cut back on the frequency of watering. Yep. If these are vegetable plants and you've had them in there for a couple of weeks now, I would think they've expanded enough to hold out, especially if they had some kind of mulching material.
Yep, and straw is a really good one. And one of my favorites for veggie gardens, at least.
The other thing to consider is to make your system a drip irrigation system so that the plants aren't getting wet at all. Yeah. And you're just having small amounts go out through a tube at the base by the roots. And that's going to be the most efficient for you. Yep. And you get rid of a whole lot of disease problems.
That's
when
really
you do
the
that.
Way of the future with a lot of crops is to go to drip because it uses so much less water.
Yeah. Ah.
Even on the West Coast where they're growing trees for pulpwood, they're watering with drip irrigation.
Yeah.
Yep, and then it does keep the foliage completely dry, which is good. You'll actually have to probably once in a while, if we don't get rain, actually do an overhead irrigation just to wash the leaves off. But hopefully we get rain before that.
After the smoke, anyway.
Peter, do you want to follow up, Peter?
All of you are such full of great information, and thank you. And once again, my apple trees, mature apple trees, have no fruit on them. Didn't have any fruit last year because it was an off year. But terribly cold weather has just made the fruit disappear. I'm kind of sad about that.
That freeze on May 17th and 18th makes a lot of fruit growers throughout the Northeast sad this year. There was a lot of crop loss in that heavy freeze on May 17th and 18th. But keep taking care of the trees, and hopefully they'll reward you with a good crop next year as well. I think people forget that they need to keep taking care of those trees, even though there's no fruit on them.
Peter, thanks a lot for the call. It's Gardening Today with Greg Ward, Bob Graves, Fred Breglia, Dale Isla Riggs, and to Livingston Manor, and it's Jane. Hello, Jane.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm calling about peonies. There was a community garden near me, and they were going to destroy it, so I dug up the peony bulbs, or whatever you call that root system. And I don't know, they didn't seem like, you know, they had some divots in them. In some places, it seemed like maybe they had been speared with a shovel. And I just didn't know how to take care of those so I can replant them.
Yeah, so the foliage hopefully is still attached because it's a little early in the spring. And so you want to, have some leaves. And they can certainly have been, cut up a bit with the shovel, but those tubers should heal up. And so just replanting them with, green side up, as they say, so the leaves coming out of the ground, the tubers in the ground, and if you remember when they took them out, the tubers were only maybe 2-3 inches down in the ground, and that's going to be maybe a little tricky if the foliage is heavy, because they might need a little support. So
might need a little stake.
Staking the foliage, getting the tubers in the ground, watering them in really well, and then twice a week or so, giving them a really good watering for the next few weeks or a month, and the leaves will probably discolor a little earlier than any established peonies this year, but peonies are pretty tough, and even if they're looking pretty well done by August, they should return next year.
Yeah, and just a word of caution, definitely don't want to plant them too deep. Peonies just don't like to be planted too deep, so
they'll
when
grow,
Greg says like
2 to 3 inches
under the soil, you really want to stick with that. Otherwise, you're going to end up with a declining plant, and it's never going to flower well.
And a sunny spot.
Yep. And sunny spot. And it's easy to overplant in terms of planting too deep. It's not too hard.
You good, Jane? You want to follow up?
No, I think I'm good.
All right. Thanks for the call. We appreciate it. 800-348-2551 is the number. And then there's Joan in Schenectady. Hello, Joan in Schenectady.
Hello, Ray. Good to hear your voice, and congrats on the fun drive.
Thank you.
And you're welcome. Believe me, I thank you. And my experts, thanks so much. I actually have been quoting most of you guys, Dale, about the freeze. I told somebody about how you were up all night protecting the plants with water freezing on it at just the exact right temperature. It was nice to have that story to share.
Great.
And it worked.
And it worked.
The blueberries were saved.
That's right. We have a huge blueberry crop coming.
All right. Joan, what's your question there, kiddo?
Wonderful. All right. My question is, I had transplanted an unknown rose from a friend's house, and I think I don't know what it is, but it definitely likes to climb. It smells wonderful, kind of almost like it just bloomed, and it smelled like hand lotion. Very simple, small, 5-petal with a very yellow center part. Is that like a briar rose or something?
Yeah, there's a single yellow rose called Hugonus rose that is more of a really large shrub than a climber, but could certainly look like a climber, and does bloom on old wood and early would be, roses typically are just not quite ready to bloom yet. There's probably going to be another week or 10 days. So that's my guess is maybe that it's a
one-time bloomer.
So it's blooming. So you don't prune this rose back, because when it grows up, the new wood won't have flowers. You leave the wood intact all winter, mm-hmm. and then it blooms on that old wood. And it's called Father Hugonus, I think, or Hugonus Rose.
Father Hugonus. Yeah,
we do have a yellow rose at the Arboretum, which is an old variety, but it's more of a shrub, like you said, and it's the Harrison's yellow rose. Yep. And it's also in full bloom right now. Although there's almost no other color to the flower except yellow on this one. So I'm not sure if that matches the description or not.
The petals aren't yellow. Okay, they're like a lovely white, almost heart-shaped, simple five-petal. And then just the very center part is a buttery gold yellow. And it's, like I said, it smells like your grandmother's hand lotion.
Roses have two smells. They have the hand lotion smell. And they have this sort of more sweet, nectary smell. There's just two.
Okay.
And some of them have both smells mixed together.
Excellent. All right.
Now, I can train it up to go up and over. It'll keep climbing to a certain limit.
Yeah. If you wanted to email a photo of the foliage and the flower, a nice open flower, but also a good shot of the foliage or the stems, maybe we can try to figure out what it is.
I don't think Joan's online. You're not online, are you?
I'm not online. I'm a neo-techno-Luddite. My camera takes photos, and I don't let it talk to anything.
I like it. You're safe. They're not tracking you, Joan. They're tracking you down.
I try, and then I realized, on your archives, my voice could be used by AI. Ugh.
Well, there you go.
Well, that's a great idea. We'll try that. Spot.
There is no escape.
There's no safe spot.
Thanks a lot. And now we've taken a dark turn on the program. Let's go to Water of Elite and try to lighten up things a bit. Leslie, you're on.
Hi. You can hear me, right?
Yes. You bet.
Okay. We just bought a condo in Water of Elite, and we didn't move in until February. And so we looked around, and everything, there was mulch around, and there was a little bit of, you could tell there's a ground cover supposed to be by the sidewalk. Well, as spring came on, that ground cover is some pachysandra, I think, but it is loaded with poison ivy, and it's growing up the tree, and we're both of us very allergic. I don't know what to put on it or what to do to get rid of the poison ivy.
Yep. So first, you can cut it. That's generally the way, or sort of, you got to use protective clothing, gloves, and you can sort of try to dig it up. That would work. You could keep cutting it. You don't have to dig it up. If you just keep cutting it, the plant cannot, there's no way that it can live because it needs those leaves to photosynthesize. And any plant that's a woody plant, like a poison ivy, that's one of the easiest ways to get rid of it. You just have to be persistent. You cut it, watch it, wait. It's going to try to resprout because it's using stored energy in its root system to do that. You wait for it to resprout, use that energy, cut it again. And it may send up another weak sprout. You do it again, and you'll win. Just make sure you use protective gear when you do it.
If it's too difficult to do and it's not too big an area, you may dig everything out. Because you know, there's no chemical you can put on that that's not going to kill the pachysandra too. As Fred said, you got to cut it or pull it.
Yep.
But if it's a small area, I don't know. I'd be inclined to dig it all out and start
and
over.
You might want to consider hiring someone to do that if you are truly very allergic. Landscape maintenance person's probably done that several times before.
There are people who don't get it. Yeah. I have never had poison ivy.
My dad has never got it his entire life. He went from as long as I knew him, he never got it once. He used to kind of joke when I was in college, and he'd say, "What's this plant?" Pick it right up from the ground, and whoa, you jump back. But so I say cutting it really works. I want to say that poison ivy is not all bad. A lot of people, it gets a really bad rap out there, but it's a great food source for a lot of animals, including overwintering birds. It's an allergic reaction, and humans are the only species to be allergic to it. Like Bob said, only about 1% of the population is immune.
A really nice fall color. It is the fall color is exceptional poison ivy.
Leslie, go ahead.
So we would probably do best to hire somebody because we both.
Yeah.
We're not too good with poison ivy. Yeah. We still have scars.
Yeah. Oh boy. Yeah. That's not good. Get somebody else.
Sure. I mean, you can't do napalm anymore, right?
Not if you tell anybody.
All right, fine. You don't have that at the garden shop, though, right? Let's go to Putnam Valley. We'll take one more, then we'll take a break. 800-348-2551. Gloria is in Putnam Valley. You're on.
Hi. Thank you very much. I also have a peony question, and I'll be quick. I'm deadheading my neighbor's peonies, kind of taking care of them. And what is a good time to move a peony. They're very close together.
Yeah, so the best time is fall or late summer. So September or October are probably the best times.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, not
and
now.
How about, you mentioned the word tuber. Are they tubers? What is a rhizome? Is that something different?
Huh. There's all sorts of underground structures that have different names.
They're both. Okay. So yeah. it's got tubers underneath. Okay.
Yeah, if you've ever you've seen it, it'll be a very large brown root mass that
I'll take a look at it.
Could be technically a rhizome. I'm not going to define that because I can't think of it. But,
no, that's okay.
But
yeah,
it's very
just the word that came to my mind.
As opposed to a sort of storage structure like a dahlia, which maybe is more true.
What are they? There's bulbs, tubers, rhizomes.
We got corms too.
Corms.
Not forget corms.
I knew there were four.
Corms.
Okay.
And can I take a leaf cutting to propagate?
Not that I know of, but I think propagation usually is either by seed. Is by seed. Or
yeah, you can
selection.
Divide them. You have to do it carefully because when you look at that structure, it's going to have sort of a root plate where little hairs come out of it. And when you do the division, you need to make sure you get a little piece of that root plate in order to make the division occur, successful. Hmm. So when you divide them, it's not just breaking them off. Try to look for see that little root plate where there's little hairs, and you want to make sure you get a piece of that. And generally, that's a fairly effective way to divide and get more peonies.
And in the
what
fall.
What if you cut through a tuber by mistake?
So they can handle some cuts.
Yeah. So in the fall, when you dig it up, the leaves can be removed, and you'll see what Fred is pointing out, these little, usually they're red or pink eyes that are just sitting, and you just want to make sure that if you divide the tuber, you have some of those on each piece.
Okay. Hey, Gloria, we got to take a break here. It's The Gardening Show with Dale Isla Riggs, Bob Graves, Fred Breglia, and Greg Ward, who is co-owner of Ward's Nursery. We'll be back. If I were a bell, I'd be ringing, and I'd thank you very much for everything you did during the fun drive. We finished it this morning, and we won't bother you with a fun drive until October, but you did marvelously, and thank you so much from everyone here. And again, I'm still giving the fun drive number from time to time. I'll get over that by tomorrow, but thanks again for all you've done. It's Gardening Today on Vox Pop. Fred Breglia is here from Landis Arboretum. Dale Isla Riggs from the Berry Patch. Greg Ward, who... he's co-owner of Ward's Nursery in Great Barrington. And Bob Graves. Did I say Bob yet?
Yes.
All right. Well, you're still the co-owner of Fatigas. Fred Breglia, did I mention your name?
You did, yes.
I'm pretty shot. All right. So,
yes, sir.
Everybody's been mentioned.
You can go. We can handle this.
We'll take it from here.
All right. So this is great. We now take apparently reservations on the emails. This subject heading two questions for after the 2:40 break. All right. Here we go, Jeff in Western Massachusetts. Table for one. We have two rose bushes against the back of the house that have been there for years. They get full morning sun till about 2 p.m. I trim them back in the fall, but this year the leaves have all turned brown and are dropping off. Still has flowers, but doesn't look good. Could be a sun issue, lack of fertilizer, water, possible disease. I haven't seen any bugs. So that's question one. Anything?
This year is water.
Yeah.
If it's not that facing it, dried
I still
up.
Think it's. It depends on when they fell off, but I would still go with the frost thing.
Could be frost.
The buds made it through. Those leaves
doesn't
are brown
say where he is,
now.
Western Mass.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I would tend to think more frost related. There was a lot of damage all over the place, throughout
which
New
is
York.
Okay. It'll come back.
Yeah, and that'll all come back. There's a small chance it could be some mechanical damage, girdling by a critter. So do check the stem down towards the ground because a lot of times plants leaf out completely perfect, although by now I would think you would know that. It would leaf out perfectly great because it would do it with stored energy, and then if it's girdled, it'll shut right down and
it'll
wilt.
Would be good to water it because
brown.
It's hurting.
But yep.
He said it is flowering, though.
It
still has flowers, it doesn't look good.
Yeah. Yep. So the flowers would be the most recent growth, and so they made it that with the frost theory, they made it through the frost. The brown is below that, is what I'm guessing.
That's what I'm thinking.
All right, question two from Jeff. I reseeded the backyard this spring. First, I spread compost and mixed in well with an aerator, seed, and starter fertilizer covered with straw to protect. Watered consistently, but with the cool spring we had, has taken a while to grow. But now we have what I was told by the seed company is lady's thumb, which is growing prolifically throughout the area. I think it came from the seed, high-end stuff, but they suggested a weed killer, which I have been unable to find yet. Any other products that would work well right now? I've been on my hands and knees removing as best I can, and the lawn looks better without it.
In those situations, it's not the seed that brought that in. It's probably the soil. It's almost always those seeds are in the soil. The seed is regulated. It's tested, and there are laws regarding what can be in seeds.
Especially if you're talking higher quality seeds, the chance of that mess up happening is not.
It sounds like a broadleaf weed killer would probably be his option if he wants to do that. There are organic forms of broadleaf weed killers too.
This is from our friend Tig in Chesterfield, Massachusetts. I like to go with the three sisters: corn, squash, and beans every summer. Any recommendations for preparing and planting the mounds, and what the ideal spacing between the mounds should be? I try to plant mine Memorial Day weekend because the corn and squash take so long to mature. By my calculation, Memorial Day weekend is over, but maybe we have some answers here.
Yeah, the three sisters is kind of a fun thing to do. I wouldn't worry about it not being Memorial Day weekend, because with this cooler weather, the soil is still very cool. And commercial farmers are planting vegetables up until the middle of July. So, you know, there's nothing magic about Memorial Day weekend. From what I've seen, usually the spacing between the hills should be about 2 feet or so. You want to give, I'd say, 4 to 6 inches between the seeds in each hill, but 2 to 3 feet between hills, and that should be good.
Now, if you wanted to do it in a traditional Native American way, you'd also put in a dead fish, wouldn't you?
That is rumored that was always
That's
part
rumored,
of it.
Rumored, yes.
And what would that do?
That's fertilizer.
Fertilizer.
Oh, yep. The only problem with that is that sometimes animals smell it.
Smell it and dig up your
And then
crop.
Dig up your dead fish. Yeah. And, of course, all the plants with it.
Yeah.
But it certainly would work. Yeah.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Well, let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551. Jim in Adams, Mass. Has been waiting a very long time. Jim, go ahead.
Hey, Ray.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
You're coming in garbled and broken up. I think my phone is losing its charge.
Uh-oh.
Anyway, I read or heard recently that you could harvest asparagus year-round by cutting, you know, if you harvest for, say, 3 months in the year, divide your usual crop area up into four sections and harvest one section, let the other three grow up to the fronds, and then harvest each other section in succession. The last section, winter months around here, you would have to mulch heavily with hay, and then, you know, you'd have to pull the hay aside, harvest, and then cover it up again.
Yeah.
What do the folks think about that?
Sounds like a lot of work.
little hay.
Sounds like a lot of work. I worry about any harvest after the middle of July. We tend to stop ours about the third week of June because, again, you want those plants producing carbohydrates for storage for next year. That said,
yeah, so you allow all the other sections to grow while you're harvesting only one section. And then when you harvest the next sections, the other ones are still all growing the fronds anyway. They'll grow just as long as they would normally, but you wouldn't be harvesting just once a year. You'd be harvesting year-round asparagus fresh.
Yeah, year-round in this climate's going to be a bit of a challenge. I can see people doing that until about September. I think like Greg said, that's a lot of work for the fall.
And I think I would double-check. I think you're right in that maybe this is, you know, southern Georgia or northern Florida where you could...
I don't know where it came from.
You could cut the fronds down in September and expect some growth again in October.
In a warm
climate.
That's not going
to happen. You're going to be weakening that bed if you do that ultimately, aren't you?
Yeah, although... Like when we're letting our fronds grow up, there are still some nice, healthy spears that come up later that you could harvest a few of those, but I wouldn't do it heavily.
I wouldn't do it heavily. Yeah, it's good because an asparagus bed will last for decades if I'm
absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Yep,
yeah.
For sure.
Jim, thanks a lot for the call. Now to Glenville, New York, and Elaine, you're on.
Hi, Ray. About 3 years ago, we planted two pretty much identical clumps of river birch. They're probably 150 feet apart. One is doing really well, and it's got great sun, good soil, as far as I can tell. The other one, about 150 feet away, probably still almost as much sun. Its feet are going to be wetter. It's a damper area. And that one is a little bit smaller, but the tops of the three trees are like they spread apart. They're not growing up, and the branches had less leaves. Some of them almost look like they didn't produce any leaves. So I was wondering if you had any thoughts about that.
They like wet ground, but I wonder if it's too wet.
Yeah, or if it was planted too deep. I mean, I've seen this where you've got, right. You know, big maple tree on the right side of a house planted at the exact same time as the one on the left of the house, and same soil and same exposure and same plant, same person who put it in. One mm-hmm. deep, one at the correct depth where the root flare sort of meets the ground level, and one tree in massive decline, top decline is where you're going to look at it. It's going to always be a top decline first. And in other words, the top parts is going to look spindlier than the rest of the
Something's not right because they like wet ground.
Yeah, it could be too deep. I can't imagine it's the water.
I think the real concern is that you sounds like you said you have branches. Are these the leaders or the tips of the tree, the top of the tree that doesn't have foliage?
No, the top really looks pretty good.
Okay.
It's just weaker and spreading apart. It doesn't appear to be as strong.
So the water... Maybe is a stress. Wet. I mean, they can tolerate wet feet, but because it's a little wet, you know, relative to the other
it
one, there
could be
a
combination
of
a little wet and a little deep.
It could be, and if it was a little deep and it was wet, it would make that situation worse.
Yeah.
You know, it could be. It needs good drainage.
Can't really do much about the deep.
Yeah.
I think because it's getting a little bit less light, because it's a little damp. As long as the top is looking strong, I think you're just going to have two that aren't going to really match because they have two different locations and two different, soil consistencies.
Yeah, it is good to know that the top part of the tree has vitality. That's the key. And when you think of them as how they're spreading apart, you had mentioned that. When we used to grow these when I lived in Oregon many years ago, and there's no such thing as actually a clump birch. It's actually three separate trees stuck into one area and grown out as a clump birch. So when you do that, it automatically is going to act like three trees. They're not going to say, okay, we're one tree now. They're going to still say, we're still three separate trees. And they tend to want to spread out and space themselves away from each other to a degree. And depending on the angle of what they were installed, sometimes they tend to spread more. Sometimes they tend to spread less. But that's sort of when you manage them, you know, I tend to manage them as three separate trees.
And also this March's snowstorm was pretty heavy and did cause some splaying, some pulling apart of trees in general, and in particular birches. So because the one that's in the wetter spot is a little thinner, a little slower, it may have just been pulled a little harder by the snow. And usually they straighten up on their own, or you can use them, the three of them, to sort of hold each other together.
You can.
If you want, with some webbing, something that won't cut into the bark.
Yep. And if you wanted to do a small reduction cut at the top, I don't know if you can reach the tops of these or have a company do it, but sometimes a small reduction cut, this doesn't mean topping trees or cutting back into hardwood. We're taking just a little bit of that thin, wispy top out. What that does is it stiffens that branch by default, and it takes some of the, think of a lever, the lever has the most effectiveness by, you know, being at the end of that lever to pull a branch down. So if you shorten the lever, you therefore reduce the likelihood of it bending down as much, just biomechanics.
All right, Elaine, thank you a lot for the call. It's The Gardening Show. Bob Graves, Fred Breglia, Greg Ward, and Dale Isla Riggs join us today. We'll go to Lake Luzerne. And Leah, you're on.
Hi, good afternoon.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Hi. So we have...
Oh, boy. Your connection's bad there, Leah. Are you walking around or are you in the car?
It's a western-facing hill.
Ah.
Pretty good size. We would have to kind of climb around and weed whack it. So we're looking for ideas of things to plant that can kind of gradually take over the grass that already is growing there. We have a couple of little kind of juniper ground cover plants that we put in last year that haven't started to take off. Okay. And then our, we have a couple other little ground covers, but nothing really seems to take.
It's a steep hill, you said, right?
Steep enough. Okay. Yeah.
It's something
it's
you
kind of gradually.
You don't want to mow it? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it's located between our garden and our driveway. Mm-hmm. And it varies. It gets kind of steeper as it gets farther up the driveway.
It's difficult to get a ground cover like junipers or cotoneaster or something like that to overtake grass. Grass is pretty hardy stuff, and they don't grow fast enough to really do that.
Daylilies might work.
Generally, you know, when you try to create a new landscape, you do remove everything that you don't want. So you clear, you know, all the plants, all the grass, any other weeds that are in there to bring it to bare soil. You amend that soil, and then you pick out something fun to plant there and mulch it in. So, I mean, that's the standard process, to try to put things in there that are going to just sort of beat back everything else. Is not going to happen. A weed whacker is what's going to beat back everything else.
Now, the other thing you can do is you can, again, remove all that grass and put a shortcut-type grass or a low-mow-type grass that doesn't have to be mowed. Grass is one of the easiest things to take care of, bar none. It's easier than rock or concrete or ground cover. I mean, if you remove all that stuff and plant some other things, you're going to weed that meticulously for years.
And putting in some kind of a meadow mix, or even a few 1 gallon or smaller plants of some meadow type of native plant. We were mentioning asters or black-eyed Susies or something like that. That will sort of, and then don't weed whack it until the end of the year. Just let it be this
rutabaga.
That's what I was going
right
for. And echinacea too.
Echinacea.
But they're going to live, and weeds are going to grow. It's going to be a combination. Those things.
All right, we have 1 minute to go. Leah, thanks for the call. This is from Mary in Reedsboro, Vermont. I'm in southern Vermont. Last Friday, we had a terrible hailstorm. Between the marble-sized hail, wind, and heavy rain, many of the plants in my perennial garden were severely damaged, especially the hostas, ferns, and Turk's cap lilies. What is the best ways to clean up the damage, and will the hostas regrow this year? The plants look like they were hacked apart, and the leaves are shredded, and that's from Mary in Reedsboro. We have 1 minute.
So the hosta center will regrow, and you remove any tattered leaves. And that's really the same with everything. The Turk's cap lilies, no. I mean, hopefully you could stake them up. They should still have some buds forming on them.
And watering and fertilizing, certainly.
Yep. Stimulate some new growth, and all the new growth will be fine. So it's just,
This cool weather is a good thing in this respect.
All right, so we're just about out of time. Bob Graves, co-owner of Fadigan's Nursery in Latham, New York. How do we find Fadigan's?
We're on Troy Schenectady Road, about 2.5 miles west of the Northway, near the Albany Airport at 1140 Troy Road.
You're online, too?
Well, of course, www.fadigans.com.
Greg Ward, co-owner of Ward's Nursery. How do we find you?
Yeah, it's wardsnursery.com, and that is the address is 600 South Main Street, Great Barrington, Massachusetts.
And Delilah Riggs, the Berry Patch.
TheBerryPatch.net, and we're at the Troy Farmers Market every Saturday from 9 to 2.
Excellent. And Fred Breglia, the Landis.
The Arboretum's at 174 Lape Road in Esperance, New York, and its website is landisarboretum.org.
That was a fast hour. That was good.
That was really quick.
So we'll
great
see
show.
You guys in 2 weeks. Support
so you,
comes.
You get to go home and rest now.
Soon. right after the school band.
I was going to say after band practice.
Support comes from Putnam County Tourism, outdoor adventure and more, a short drive away in the lower Hudson Valley, offering hiking, biking, days on the farm. Visit Putnam.org. Putnam County, I love New York. And Pioneer, providing the capital region with banking, insurance, employee benefits, and wealth management services. Altogether forward. PioneerNY.com. Once again, thanks to Fred Breglia, Bob Graves, Greg Ward, and Delilah Riggs. Thank you for all you did today, yesterday, day before, last week in the Fun Drive. Fun Drive is done. We will pick up that particular riff again in October. But till then, you're safe. Thanks again for being here on Vox Pop. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer, and Ed Rosen screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow on Food Friday, we welcome back the one, the only, Jennifer Clare. We'll see you tomorrow at 2.